Hey, my name is Gavin O'Mara. I am the CEO and founder of FE News, and welcome to episode 3 of VocTech Futures. This episode is all around UFI VocTech Challenge and what it means for FE, and we've got a really, really cool show for you today. VocTech Futures, this is a co-produced live stream with FE News and UFI VocTech Trust, and today my co-host is Hilary Stringer. Hilary, would you like to join me in the studio?
Good morning, Gavin. I'm splendid, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, really, really good. We've got a really cool show today because it's all looking, we're looking to the future, and we're particularly, I want to sort of, first of all, sort of cover a few things on VocTech Challenge and what it means for FE, but we've got a really interesting one because you're in the Pyrenees. We've got our two guests are like totally remote. We've got Jeff, who's in the Sierra Nevada in Spain. We've got Peter, who's in his camper in Lewis. We're exploring what the future of learning, the future of delivery, and the future of work can be. And I can't think of a better way to be able to show this for real in across all of the world, basically. Can we talk about the challenge? So what did it mean, and what was the outcome? So I know there's a couple of parts to this, which I think is really quite interesting for the audience, but they might not know what the challenge was all about.
Well, it really started for UFI out of our experience during the pandemic, that we created VocTech Now, our rapid response fund. And all of the responses to that meant we had kind of a unique window into what was going on in the sector. About 700 people had applied. And so we could see what they were struggling with, what technology they had, what they didn't, what they were experienced in, and where they just simply didn't have a clue. And from that, we asked wider. We talked to all of our partners and looked at other resources and came up with a set of assumptions for what it felt like to be out there, being a teacher, being a learner, being a developer, out in VocTech world, in the middle of all of the craziness of the pandemic. We are committed to using design thinking in UFI to really look at user needs. So we're not taking those assumptions and building something from them. We're going to go and ask questions. So we spent 3 months just making sure we were asking the right question. And interestingly, what came back was very consistent across all of the groups, that it was about the technology, but it wasn't just about the technology. Having access to the right kit, being in a place where you could use that kit, having the right bandwidth is the starting point. But the home situation of many of our learners was really dire. And that those with the good fortune of having a spare bedroom or a kitchen or somewhere to work didn't really know what that experience was like. So there were some that were more disadvantaged than others through this period. So technology is a key thing, but that's not UFI's bag. We don't do kit. So we looked at other things, and confidence came through. Confidence for the learners to simply be on screen, to try some vocational learning when you've had a really bad time at school. How do you re-engage someone that's disengaged? For those, the pandemic made it even worse because, again, you're remote, you're further away, and that digital divide is even bigger. Digital skills forms a part of that, but it's only a part. And there are some fantastic organisations like IDEA that we're working with who are doing great work around digital understanding improvement and getting levels up around that. So that's not something UFI was going to tackle. Community practical learning. How on earth do you teach practical workshop skills when you can't get into the workshop? We've got some great projects which you'll learn a bit more about in a future episode in the rural community. Animal care on a remote basis. How do you do these things? There are some big, big challenges there for us to look at. And for the developers, it's a hard market to break into. Back in the day when I was first in tech, you'd to be told you never get sacked for buying IBM. Well, the same here. You don't get sacked for buying a well-known LMS. But how does the little guy with a brilliant idea or the woman with a brand new innovation, how do they break into the market when there are no early adopters to pick up their technology and use it? So all of that into a green paper, which we tested again. And we keep on saying test early, test often, keep asking. And validated. So our white paper, we decided to focus on confidence. And one of our guests today prompted me to say, it isn't just learner confidence. This is the confidence of teachers and trainers and educators to use this, to be confident teachers using the VocTech. And we had a fascinating session with the educators about what it was like for them to live in this world. But our VocTech Challenge grant call is focused on confidence, motivation in learners and the staff that support them. And I can't tell you anything about that because it's out with our external assessors, and so it's zipped until November. We'll be able to tell you a bit more once that's all announced. But we are very excited with the quality of projects that have come in. But it's a difficult ask. What we're asking here is to look for the people who are most affected by the digital divide, and what can we do to bring things forward for them that make it easier to join in with what everybody else has.
Could you sort of explain a bit of detail about our guests? Because I know you've worked with them very, very closely, and you'll do it more justice than I would around Jeff and Peter. And in a little bit we'll bring them in, and I think it's just really exciting what we're trying to do. And I think the weather's been kind as well, because here in Exeter, where I'm at the moment, the weather's just actually turned, but we've had the absolute hammering rain. So to be doing this remote is testing the kit to the extremes. Could you explain a bit about Jeff and Peter and why we're bringing them in? Because it's interesting background as to both the guests.
Yeah, well, I'll make it short. They will explain more about themselves. But Jeff and Peter are both long-standing members of the VocTech family. Jeff's done several projects with us. He was the Learning and Technology Development Manager at Pembrokeshire College, and was kind of a shining light through all of this period. And it was Jeff that nudged me when we were looking at the learner needs to also look at the educator needs, and was part of that conversation. And it was a fascinating couple of hours we had. Peter Kilcoyne's worked with us on various projects, but in the context of today, his work with the Blended Learning Consortium is really interesting, because he's worked across a number of colleges in the UK, saw how they responded, and saw how they're responding now. Because for me, this is about the future. This is a learning from everything we had to do very rapidly during the pandemic, but consolidating what works and consolidating what's good. And both of these guys really know what works and what's good.
That's great. So can we introduce you in Jeff, who's in the Sierra Nevada, and Peter, who is in Lewis. Welcome.
Hi, Isle of Lewis rather than Lewis near Brighton, just in case.
Oh, Isle of Lewis. Oh, well, I've got it completely wrong. I just picked up on the Lewis bit. Sorry about that. Even more remote and better, so that's all good. This is really interesting, though, because the pandemic has really sped this up, is around the different changing nature of work, the different changing nature of delivery, and we're looking at VocTech in particular. So if the world of work has changed, the world of vocational training and delivery has changed, and this is testament to what we're doing here, really. I wanted to talk about some of the things from the VocTech Challenge that come out, but particularly I want to start with the digital divide, because this is quite interesting what we're doing today. So could we talk about digital divide and what you've noticed, Peter and Jeff, around digital divide, and what sort of happened for you and your colleagues over the pandemic period, and what's happening like now? Peter, did you want to go for it, or Jeff, you go for it, you went first.
So from the perspective of Pembrokeshire College, the digital divide, the Welsh Government put a lot of money in at the beginning of COVID to buy kit for all our learners. So the kit was available for our learners, which was great. But I think one of the biggest challenges is that, where do you study from? Lots of our most disadvantaged learners live in very unstructured, messy houses and homes without any support. You know, they'd be studying from the kitchen tabletop and all the rest of it. And I think that's probably what have been some of the biggest challenges. You might have younger siblings around you. I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges.
And Peter, what did you find?
I think it would very much reflect what Jeff said, that when the first lockdown happened, it was very clear that an awful lot of our learners didn't have access to the right kit, the right connectivity, the right spaces to learn in. One of the things that hugely impressed me about the sector, and I think it happened in many colleges, was the IT team loading up minibuses full of laptops and other devices and whizzing around the local areas, dropping them off, finding innovative ways of providing data for learners that didn't have data for study. I just think it was incredible that the lockdown happened very quickly. There was no time for real sort of consolidated planning, and how quickly people were able to adapt to that. But it really did expose the challenge that a lot of our learners have, and to a lesser degree, some of our staff that they don't have the right kit at home. You know, many of them would have taken their work laptops home, and might not have had the suitable spaces to work at home, particularly when they had sort of kids, that they were trying to homeschool at the same time as well. So very challenging, and the digital divide was very clear between the families that had a very strong broadband connection, had the 50 megs plus type connection, to ones that didn't have any broadband, and they were sort of having to manage through older mobile phones with limited data.
And that has an impact on learning design as well, that you can create the most wonderful VocTech, but if someone doesn't have the bandwidth to be able to receive it, then those are only really useful in classroom situations where you have got the stable, reliable access to data.
And the device as well, that even if you got the bandwidth, if someone's using an older device, it might not have the capacity to run some of the later applications.
Yeah, no, 100%. It really made it quite stark. What was interesting, there was still investment from government in sort of buildings during that period, rather than sort of digital infrastructure, which was quite interesting. So hopefully people are listening and sort of thinking, well, look into the future, how do we develop and retain and grow the digital infrastructure? Because like we're seeing here, this is learning out of the building. Do you know what I mean? This is learning, taking it away. You don't need buildings for this. And particularly, Peter, I know you're going to be running a couple of sessions later today, aren't you?
I'm doing a BLC session to a college that's looking to join the BLC, where I'm meeting with a number of their staff, and I'm delivering a training session on a content creation tool, iSpring, to a university at the other side of Scotland, all from my camper van in the very remote part of the Outer Hebrides.
Can we talk about the challenge teacher sessions, and particularly because a lot of the pandemic focused on the learner, and rightly so, but I'm really quite interested on how we can support educators as well. And I think you have some really interesting findings from the teacher sessions. Did you want to explain briefly, Hilary, what the sessions were about and how that sort of come together and what the findings were?
Yes. Going back to the focus on design thinking, that we wanted to actually talk to the people who were involved rather than having it second hand, we wanted to go and ask the question. And one of the colleagues who joined us on that day was a learning technologies manager in a college who said, we are meant to be the mavericks, those who are breaking new ground, who are driving through the ice and bringing new things in. But for the whole of this period, all we've done is help people with the basic stuff just to get online. And they did a fantastic job. The sector, as Peter said, absolutely pulled together, and really just the response was amazing. But there aren't enough. There are just not enough people with the core qualifications in early learning technologies to be able to support the demand. I know the Association of Learning Technologies was working really hard on this, but at the time it just threw it into sharp relief that there are not enough experts out there to help. And it also exposed that where colleges had rolled out some important infrastructure and software, not everybody was actually using it. That there had been a lot of lip services, probably too unkind, but people who had long-standing good practices, were great teachers, were transferring classroom teaching into the online environment without having an understanding of how it's different in digital. So there were a whole thing, a set of things around there about the experiences. I'm going to hand over to Jeff in a minute because he was there with us. But some of the stories we were getting of how grim it was for the teachers as well during that period, where they were alone, they were trying to be supportive, but it wasn't easy for them at home. Jeff, don't know if you want to share some of your experiences.
Well, I think you've just pretty well said it, Hilary, that you know, we've had this technology, we've had VLEs, we've had platforms like this for a decade, but there hasn't been really a great incentive to use it. So, and I think Peter mentioned, we've just dropped it, our teachers were dropped in the deep end. So there was no time to sort of, for them to reflect on the pedagogy of how you deliver an online session. They were just thrown into it. And those young people who come from those backgrounds I mentioned, they just didn't want to turn their camera on. There was some, I think that young people's protocol is you just don't turn your camera on. So it was pretty, it's a hard slog. If the teacher's like teaching 8 hours a day to a screen and they're not getting any response, the occasional sort of a message on a chat, it was really demanding for them. And there's one other thing I would like to mention is that as this evolved, you could have ended up with sort of quite complex delivery models. So you might have the teacher in the classroom, the learners at home, the LSA at home, some of the students in the classroom, some of the students at home. So you ended up with this extraordinary mix of where the learners are and where the teachers are, and that was really, really hard. Gavin, you're doing a great job as a presenter, Jørn, and you're bringing people in and out. In a sense, we were asking our teachers to become professional presenters, to bring in the remote audience with the audience sitting in front of them. And there's, I don't think there is even any kind of like research or pedagogy that covers that kind of thing. It's been a real challenge. And I think certainly the college I work for have gone back to about 80-90% classroom delivery, but they're still retaining that 10% online. And we still need to focus on how we best handle that 10%.
Peter, how would you say we need to sort of lessons learned? Because that's really interesting, Jeff. And I've got kids myself, so I noticed that they didn't want to have their cameras on. It's an interesting sort of shift. It's like, why haven't you got your camera on? I don't want it on. No one's got the camera on. And it was just interesting as to why that sort of happened, really. What do you see sort of as a way forward for so what Jeff said? It is like a presenting sort of role it's become, isn't it, around when you're looking at sort of digital divide and presenting digitally. You're about to do it in a minute. What do you sort of see as the future for learners, for staff, for people training future staff as well?
Well, I think that it was really the good, the bad, and the ugly that kind of happened during this period, and it was just incredible that almost anything happened, given that how quickly lockdown happened and how little time there was for planning. But taking the positive sort of side of this, there was some outstanding practice and things emerged where, some teachers, partly the innovative teachers who had always been using the technology, but not only that, also those teachers who it was their first time in using the technology, who sort of had the imagination to try different things. And I think that there's a real opportunity for a piece of work to be done to capture what was the best pedagogy that was happening over the last year or so, and to distill that into perhaps some training resources to support teachers in finding simple ways in which you can engage a group of learners who are all sitting remotely, not wanting to engage, wanting to have their cameras off. The sorts of things I've seen is things like, the teacher, the bad practice is the teacher talking for an hour. Right, I'm going to deliver my lecture as if I was in the classroom. I'm going to talk to you for an hour. And that doesn't work. The good practice is very short bits of teacher input, followed by giving tasks that the learners have to engage in, and using the tools that are available, whether that's through the VLE, through Microsoft Teams, which massively sort of increased in its usage over the last year and a half, and sort of building engagement into that and making sure that's part of that delivery. And so there's been a lot of good practice that has occurred. And I think something else that's really important to capture, and I hope we don't lose, is that people like myself and Jeff, and me and Jeff go back a long time. We've known each other for over 20 years working in this sort of digital learning space. We've been working with staff trying to encourage them to use this technology and to develop them. And there's been those staff who have been very keen to engage. There's been, the small 10% in colleges that are maybe 50-60% who, with a bit of prodding and nudging will have a go. And then there's that 20-30% who, whenever, I'm sure Jeff knows these people too, whenever you walk down the corridor, they scuttle away into dark corners. they're scared that you're going to talk to them about something digital that they're not interested in. And this damn virus, and you know, you're recovering from it. I had it early days. It's a horrible thing. But one good thing about it is done more to develop the digital skills of teachers than people like me and Jeff have done in 20 years. This virus.
Yes. One of our former trustees made that point, that 20 years of advocating and in 6 months, more things had shifted and moved forwards. And we
absolutely
saw some amazing transformations in some of our VocTech Now projects, that seasoned professionals who were, their only concern was that the students should get the best possible experience and were very nervous about their ability to do it online. Once given the chance to play and the space by good managers to test it, to try it, to fail, to learn, they came up with some amazing things and realised that they were tools that could lighten their own load. There was a great article from JISC yesterday on LinkedIn from Paul McKean, talking about the different kinds of technologies and how they wouldn't replace the teacher, but they would make the teacher's experience an awful lot better because they could do different things, they could do better things using VocTech than they've ever been able to do before.
We mentioned a few things. I know you're both working on an interesting project which is shortlisted for the Learning Technology Awards. Can we talk about Audaxive? Because the time's disappearing and we're like, we could be talking about this forever. I really want to cover Audaxive and maybe if we could share a bit around what is the vision of Audaxive and where it's going from and to, really.
Could I just, I think talking about the future of VocTech, the way we react with computers should be much more natural. It should be as if we're talking to a human being or working with a human being. And part of that digital divide is we're still trying to force people to use a keyboard, and we're still trying to get them to understand the computing paradigm. So our technology needs to become more responsive and work as if we are like human beings. So the idea of Audaxive is that instead of like typing an answer on a keyboard, that you talk to that learning object, and the learning object talks back to you. So Audaxive is a tool that builds two-way interactions. So Audaxive will tell you something, talk about something, like for instance, it'll talk about sort of the Sierra Nevada, for instance, and then it might ask you a question about it. What do you understand about the Sierra Nevada? And then the learner can respond. So those learners who are disadvantaged, they don't have typing skills, their written English isn't very good, they can just say their answer, and that can be picked up by Audaxive, and that's kind of like, I think, where the technology needs to go to, and that's what we're trying to do with Audaxive. So is to sort of build a tool that responds more to the natural way in which we work as human beings, not the way that computers force us to work. UFI fantastically have actually funded us and supported us for the last 2.5 years, and we've come a long, long way now. We've got like a mature product, and luckily having Peter on board as the kind of like to be able to sort of drive this forward in the sector has been absolutely wonderful. And it's probably worth Peter telling us exactly where we've got to with the sector and Audaxive.
Yes, certainly. I mean, I love the Audaxive tool. I'm going to give you the finger now and just explain why I'm giving you the finger. I've literally been injured by keyboards. I have a permanent injury to my knuckles, and I because I've worked in learning technology for 20 years, and the sooner we can get away from using keyboards, the better. They're dangerous devices, and I think a lot of people who use them regularly will, you know that they've got various RSI things. And what I love about Audaxive is it gives you the ability to interact with learning resources through voice to text and text to voice. So as a learner, you can listen to that resource and you can speak to it, and you don't ever need to get involved in a keyboard. And I think that to me is a real sort of future of learning. And the way that Audaxive is being developed at the moment, last year we did a project with 8 FE colleges, and we tested it across a range of subjects. And the key lessons learned, it worked very well in all areas, but it worked particularly well with ESOL and with visually impaired learners and with dyslexic learners. Yeah. So one of the colleges we had in was the Royal National College for the Blind, and that whole voice of text voice was fabulous for their learners and staff. But we've taken the kind of ESOL side of it, and we're adapting Audactive now for language teaching, for ESOL and for modern foreign languages. So, for example, a language teacher can create a resource, say they're teaching French, where the learner can hear the French, and then they can either respond to it in French or they can respond to it in English. Maybe they can do a translation in English, and what they speak will then get captured as text. And so it's a multilingual text-to-voice application that also has assessments built into it. So the teacher can set multiple choice, open questions. It has SCORM functionality, so that can all get fed back into the VLE. It's got a fabulous app. And it's just a project I'm really excited about. I've got 100 language teachers across universities, colleges and schools who are raring to go. We're going to the developer Ronan is just finishing off the developments to make this language teaching work, and we're going to start piloting it in November.
Sounds really, really cool. We've only got what, 4 minutes left. I can't believe that time has disappeared. There's so many more things I want to ask you. Really briefly, what's next for VocTech Challenge? Where is going to next? Because this is really interesting. If there's more projects like Audactive which are helping ESOL, you know, just think of what's happened with Afghanistan, all those people that have had to fly over in that tragic situations. How can we support them? You know, also around, you know, helping neurodiverse learners, being more inclusive, sounds all good to me. What is the future for the challenge?
Well, the projects will hopefully be starting before Christmas. They're going to have a define phase as the first thing that they do to really sit down with the users and find out what it is that they really need. Because we've asked the people applying to us to look for those communities of learners who are not well served by what's out there at the moment. We have other projects that are dealing with ESOL, our First Step Trust project dealing with people with dyslexia using VR, so that we know these things can work. So those projects will roll out at Christmas. But for UFI, it isn't just about the grants. We partner with a number of amazing organisations that are doing fantastic work across the sector in lots of different ways. So it's about advocacy for us, about using our voice and things like this, where we can get out to bigger audiences and convince more people that VocTech can make a real difference. More research pieces. This was our first real piece of research that UFI have done. We're going to do more of it and more public sector engagement so that we get our voice into the corridors of power where we can make a difference there as well. So it's going to be a busy year. There will be a review 12 months on and then a review at 2 years to see whether we've achieved the change we wanted to. Because our view is that we're a small organisation, but we have we catalyse change. Small amounts of money that you give to people like Jeff just create miracles, and that's what we want to do more of. But this, for us, it's about the future. We're learning from the pandemic, but we don't want to stay there. We want to embed the good practice that was learned into what people take into their futures.
Yeah, no, David, that's my last question. We've got a minute and a half left. I'm so sorry, everyone. The time's shot by. Jeff, look into the future. What would you want to see for the future of VocTech?
I've already said that it needs to be more human-like in the way we interact with it. The key thing for VocTech is how we make the delivery and support of these skills. We've talked about online delivery. That's not vocational education. Vocational education is practical skills. Yeah. And it's the technology that makes the delivery and the acquisition of practical skills more efficient and easier. And I think like AI and neural networks, so that a neural network can see somebody making a tenant joint and say, no, you're doing that wrong. You know, so you train a neural network in how in all the vocational skills, and they support the learner. I think that's where we need to go to. It is about focusing on the skills themselves, not this, you know, this is done now. We got our online platforms, but we need to sort of support people how they do those physical skills. What can we get? What cameras can we get in there? And how can we take the load off the teacher and support the learner themselves in doing those skills?
That's great. Peter, what would you want to see for the future of VocTech?
I was going to say one thing. I say more collaboration, I think, is the key. And I think this is the UFI really supports well, is collaborative projects. I've been involved in a UFI project for GTA England this year, which is a group of engineering providers where we've been developing online learning content. And that's been a really exciting project. So I think projects that develop collaboration, and that also sort of was building up the skills of their teaching staff to build online learning resources. I think that the Blended Learning Consortium has been a model of collaboration that, you know, through this whole pandemic has supported and shared practice across a whole load of colleges and provided content for them. So I think things that promote collaboration and sharing of good practice and sharing of solutions is the key. And in terms of technology, things that take us away from keyboards, from mouses, things that VR, AR, you know, simulations, augmented realities, this is where the future is going to be, and that sort of engaging learning.
And Hilary, what would you want to see?
I think they've said it all. It's about us experimenting with the possible. This is about the art of the possible. But just to reiterate what Jeff said, this is about vocational skills. Our chief exec always says a skill learned ought to be a skill used. So we want people to be gaining skills remotely if they can, in blended situations, in college, in hybrid, if that's the best way. But that those skills include their digital confidence to be able to explore the world for themselves.
Yeah, that's really cool. I've been said that I always avoid this question, so I'm going to answer it. I would like to see us be able to support educators, because the future of work has changed. Look at us today, all across the world. How can we then rectify and replace that back to the future workforce, so as we can deliver in and support those educators to deliver in different innovative ways, really? Our time's gone. We're over. I just want to say thank you so much, everyone, for joining us today. I hope this really inspires you to be thinking of new ways of delivering VocTech and to be delivering for your learners and for the future of work. Hilary, thank you so much for your help. This is totally co-produced. Thank you, Thomas, in the background as well. Jeff and Peter, thank you for joining us. FE News Squad, thank you. Leah, thank you, Finley. Thank you, Kelly. Thanks for making the magic happen. And we'll see you same time next week for VocTech Futures. Bye.
Bye-bye.